We get things rolling, though, by getting on the aforementioned G&M Family Market phone line and welcoming to the program our friend John Alba from ABC7, Fox 22. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too, Rich. Let me tell you, one of my favorite lines in all of television history is, to you it may be me and Mar, but it'll always be Burma to me. So having John O'Hurley on this show alongside myself, man, what an honor that is.
I think he feels the same way, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Okay. Gotcha.
You were down at Frozen Fenway, which is normally reserved for the hockey games there, but for football this time around, it was hockey-like weather. But what a great atmosphere it was on Saturday afternoon.
Oh, man, we were down on the field before the game, a few hours before the game, just kind of taking it in, and I think that was the coolest thing about it. You know, I was down there alone trying to crunch a whole bunch of stuff, and when you're doing that, you don't really have a lot of time to take everything in, so I made sure to take a few minutes before the game, and what an amazing experience, and I think all the players and the coaches that were there, especially on the UMaine side, took a moment after the game, a couple days afterwards, to really embrace the fact that they got to do something special. And, you know, it may not have been the outcome they wanted, but, I mean, take a moment like that kick return touchdown from Ernest Edwards into the Red Sox bullpen. That's going to be something he's going to remember for the rest of his life. It was amazing.
So the Bears lost that game. They're now 4-5, the season finale this weekend. It's a chance to finish with a .500 record, a chance to beat a conference opponent and a likely playoff team. But as you look at this season, John, would you say it's been a disappointing year for the Black Bears?
I think that's a tough question to answer fairly because, I mean, you look at it, you start a season, your goal is to make the playoffs in the first place. So by not making the playoffs, yes, it's disappointing in that regard. But I think the one big takeaway that the Black Bears and a lot of Black Bears fans can have solace in is that the performance of the underclassmen this year was just off the charts. You know, Chris Ferguson showed that he has superstar potential, still some room to grow. Josh Mack is legitimately one of the top running backs in all the FCS, and this week he could clinch that title as being the top back in the FCS. On defense, Kane Whitaker, Jerron Grayer, guys like them stepping up, proving that, man, the young guns are here to stay. And, you know, they'll lose 24 seniors this year, which is tough, and not being able to make the most out of having a great offensive line, yeah, that could be seen as a bit of a disappointment. But you also had the disadvantage of not having Micah Wright all season long, and that hinders your prospects as well. So, honestly, I think the Black Bears will be able to bounce back next year and have a better season next time out, given all the production of the underclassmen.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. There's certainly some bright spots on the horizon. They're very tough schedule for them next year with some challenging road games and very few visits to the friendly confines of Alfond Stadium. But that's the situation the Bears in. As the only team in the country that plays two FBS opponents every year, you're always going to find yourself on the road a lot because those FBS teams aren't coming to Orono anytime soon.
And it's not like they weren't able to compete with UMass. You know, they were in that entire game. And there were multiple spots in that game that you could pinpoint and say, okay, maybe this is where the tide turned. But there's very few games that Maine is not competitive at any point. And it did happen a couple times this year for a variety of different reasons. But very rarely does it happen. And, yeah, tough slate next year. And like you said, the few home games that you have, that hinders you. But it was the same situation this year, too, because you've lost a home game going down to Portland. So they only were able to play four. They've only played three to this point. So, you know, you take that experience that you gained, you put it in your pocket, and you remember when you go into next year.
John, it's also a big weekend coming up. High school football state championship games, always a fun time for fans.
Oh, how can it not be? And just an amazing story out in Class C with what MCI has done this year. It is pretty incredible. The Bertrand family story is well documented. You can head to our website, foxbangor.com, if you'd like to see more about that. We did something yesterday on that. But MCI, a team that won Class D last year in incredible fashion and bounces back, goes up a class, knocks off the two top teams in the division, and finds itself playing for a state championship at the University of Maine tomorrow night. And we'll be there, and I expect that to be a really fun contest to watch just because it's been seen this year in Class C across the board. Parity exists, and Cape Elizabeth is not a terrible draw for MCI when all is said and done. And, yeah, I'd say across the board, Scout Hegan also pulled things together in that Class B North final. Foxcroft Academy, I was at that game, that Class B North final, just complete dominance of Bucksport from start to finish there. And some good stuff coming up this weekend.
We're talking with John Alba, ABC7, Fox 22. John, you worked for the MLB Network. Any surprises yet in your mind in the big awards for Major League Baseball?
No, I think things have unfolded pretty much as I expected them to. I thought that Chris Sale's last month and a half of the season probably cost him the Cy Young Award. Mm. And, you know, you can try to be objective about it, but when all is said and done, the last half of the season matters a lot more than the first half of the season. And I think that's why Corey Kluber, who was absolutely dominant in his own right, was able to pull away from Chris Sale. I think the race that everyone's got their minds on is today the AL MVP race, where you could make fantastic arguments for either Jose Altuve and Aaron Judge. My gut tells me that Jose Altuve wins it just because you don't see that kind of production from second baseman really ever, very rarely. But with that said, you also don't see that kind of production from a rookie that Aaron Judge had. And you think if Aaron Judge didn't have that month and a half stretch, that month stretch where he couldn't hit anything, this is a guy who's probably approaching 70 home runs this year, which is absurd in its own right.
You know, he gets overlooked because he, you know, pitches in Washington. We don't see the games as much here. But Max Scherzer with the third Cy Young Award, are we looking at, if all continues to go well, a Hall of Fame career for him?
Oh, he's amazing. And I will be the first to own it. There's a great Twitter account, Freezing Takes Exposed, and I'd submit myself to that because I thought when they dropped that $200-plus million contract on him, I thought that was a farce. And this guy has been amazing for them. You mentioned the three Cy Young Awards. There's only a handful of guys in Major League history who have that on their resume. Also, 200-plus innings pitched, 240-plus strikeouts in over the course of that span, five All-Star games in the last 5 years. This guy is the real deal, and, yeah, he's on a Hall of Fame trajectory. You know, it also comes down to how we view Hall of Fame candidates. You know, no longer are we constrained by those, you must have 300 wins. Oh, you must have 3,000 strikeouts. We're not in that era anymore. And that's why, I mean, to me, it was just so ironic. Probably about a week before Roy Halladay passed away, I was going through his Hall of Fame candidacy on Baseball Reference, which is my all-time favorite website in the history of the Internet, and just going through the advanced stats. And I think a guy like Max Scherzer is someone who you'll look at that regard. You'll see if he wins a World Series or not, because these national teams are probably due for one at some point. But right now, he's certainly on a trajectory.
I'm not a huge fan of a lot of what ESPN does, but the 30 for 30s are absolutely fantastic. I haven't seen it yet, but you've seen the 30 for 30 on Ric Flair, and everybody I talk to says it's one of the best ever.
It's a fun one for sure. Extremely emotional and gripping, and that was what got me more than anything else. Ric Flair is well known within the industry as an incredibly emotional human being. And there's a scene in this film, and I won't go too much into specifics on it, but I think it's well documented that his son did pass away of an overdose a few years back. And there's a particular scene in the film where they go all in on that, and it is incredibly difficult to watch. But, you know, Ric Flair is one of those names that whether you're a wrestling fan or not, you know who he is. He transcends sports. He transcends entertainment. He's a larger-than-life figure, your quintessential professional wrestler, if you will, and personality. And, you know, I really enjoyed it a lot. I've obviously paid attention to Ric Flair's career for pretty much my whole entire being as a wrestling fan, 20-plus years. And, you know, the movie did a lot of great things. The one thing I kind of wish it would have had more of, I would have liked to have seen other talking heads either validate or push back on some of the claims being made by Rick. Some of the claims were a little outlandish, but all in all, it was meant to really own in on a guy who was truly living the gimmick, a guy who believed he was this limousine riding, jet flying, no good son of a gun, you know, and that is what it all boils down to. And it's a fantastic watch. I highly recommend for everyone.
John, you're a multi-talented guy, and next week you're going to be back on stage performing down in Asbury Park, New Jersey.
Oh, man.
A tribute to Springsteen. How awesome is this?
I don't know, man. You know, I don't know if I'll emotionally be ready to do it because the night before I'm actually seeing Bruce on Broadway.
Oh.
And I mean, for anyone who...
What, did you sell an organ to get those tickets?
No, I got extremely lucky.
You know,
you had to join the Ticketmaster verified lottery to just sign up to get a chance to even bid for tickets. I got through that, and then I got on, found my date, and was able to get in on wholesale. I got very lucky, but, you know, Springsteen, for any diehard Springsteen fan, you know this, Springsteen's like a religion, and being in that intimate 850-person theater and seeing him tell stories, and it's based on his autobiography, which if you haven't read it, it's just amazing. It's incredible storytelling. I'm going to be doing that, and then the next day I'll be playing a set in Asbury Park, his home at the Wonder Bar, a bar he's frequented many times. He's playing all Bruce songs, so I can't wait to be a part of that.
That's fantastic. Hey, John, it's always great talking with you. Thanks for checking in with us this afternoon, and good luck covering those games this weekend.
Thank you, Rich. I really appreciate it, and we'll chat soon.